Here we meet again.
Another episode of Two Writers
Talking Shit.
And today we have an amazing writer.
Her name alone is absolute epic. I've never heard a better name.
I know. She makes me want to change my name.
I am going to change my name.
Let me change your name. Lucy Luna in the building.
Thank you for having me. We're excited.
Thank you for being here.
Yes.
And real quick, let me just say, side note, we both know Kayla, producer, final draft passed. She was one of the first people to write an article on me. Maybe on you too, because it was rising the ranks or whatever. Side note, I do want to say, you don't know this, but you kind of were an inspiration early on, because I remember she was one of the writers I followed on Twitter early. And she was like in the mix, and she was like placing in fucking contests and doing all the shit I wanted to do, you know, like ISA, Austin, Screen, all kind of shit. And I got to like watch her rise, and it kind of inspired me to be like, okay, let me go ahead and enter these fellowships. So...
And now we're both here.
We started from the bottom, now we're here.
Now we're here on this podcast.
So real quick, you were telling us about your background and immigration and all that. Do you want to give us a quick little story about your process of like getting into screenwriting?
So I always loved writing. I didn't know that I loved it when I already was loving it. I was writing... short horror stories when I was a little kid. I was inspired by, I don't know if you remember these books, Goosebumps. So that was like my first
R.L. Stein.
Yes.
Okay. All right, Mel.
Exactly.
With the assist.
I read the books, I watched the show, and I mean, I was a little kid and I was just starting to do that. And also, my mom, she's a family doctor, but she was a medical examiner at the time. So I feel like I just had all this horror inspiration, and I started just writing. And then I started getting into movies, horror movies as well. I started with Scooby-Doo. Then I transitioned, you know, to...
What a horror movie that is.
Watching Scooby-Doo as a child. And then, of course, I graduated to Halloween and Scream and all those classics. And it was, I can't remember what movie it was, but, you know, back in the day when we had DVDs, behind the scenes, you know, they had these little clips. And it just blew my mind that to see people on set running around. And I was like, someone wrote this. And that's when I was like, I want this power. This is what I want to do. So I started to transition from horror stories to scripts.
That's dope. I didn't know it was horror that got you into it, though.
Yeah, I've been obsessed with it for a long time. I think now, as I am maturing as a writer, I realize that my sensibilities are more for thrillers. I consume both, but when I write... Every time I want to write a horror, a thriller comes out. I've worked in horror shows and a horror film as well, but if I am allowed to choose, it just a thriller comes out. But yeah, it's my passion.
What's your favorite horror movie of all time?
The Orphanage.
Oh, shit. Oh. Yeah.
Sounds scary.
You have to watch it. It's a Spanish movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, when you say that your mom was the medical examiner, like, do you mean that, like, you could go down to the morgue, like, CSI style, and, like, you're looking at the bodies, and it's like, this was a blunt force trauma to the head kind of thing?
Yeah, my mom would open up the bodies and come up with a conclusion of how they died. So that impacted me, like, on many, many levels, from being... scared as a little girl. I was like, oh my god, I remember this time where I didn't want to go to sleep because I thought I was gonna just not wake up. And I remember that being like 2 months, like a 7-year-old, traumatized, and I tell that to my mom and she's like, no, it was just like 3 days. but that was like the only thing that I think was a little shocking, but I think it helped me I don't know, see death as a more natural thing. My mom always, I still cannot believe that she did this, but she would just be so thoughtful and just like, no, I'm here to give answers to someone so that they can go and grieve, as healthy as they can. Just giving answer to people. But I mean, yeah, from coming down, in the morning to have breakfast and my mom just forgetting to put a photograph away or something.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, oh, my mom, I'm just gonna throw up right now. And she's like, no, look how beautiful the brains are. You know, this is how they look. Anyway, wow. Yeah, she's like absolutely passionate about that.
Mom.
Yeah.
So what was the script that kind of changed your life as far as, because I know you were writing and doing stuff like that, but like, what was the script that changed your life as a screenwriter?
Not a horror.
See?
It's a road trip movie, Sophie and Valentina. It's the script that placed in all of those contests and fellowships that you were mentioning. And yeah, it's just a friendship road trip movie, very small, very intimate. And I loved it. I mean, I didn't know I could write drama, or character. And up to this day, my reps still send that sample out.
Wow.
It actually got me a horror job.
Love it.
Because a rewrite that the producers were like, well, now we need to work on character. All the scares are there, all the structure is there, but the character needs a little bit of work. And that sample actually got me the job, which is pretty funny if you think about it. Yeah.
But it makes sense, though, because I think some of the best horror films, you have to, like, care for the characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, even in Shining, which is one of my favorite ones.
Yes.
It's like, you do spend a lot of time with, like, Jack and, like, you know what I mean? And, like, with the kid. And, like, so it's like, you know, the character development. So it would make sense where it's like, okay, cool. And even horror now, like, horror is so popular now.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I think the audience is a lot smarter now. So it's like, you do need that character work in the horror film. So it does make sense. What made you apply to fellowships? What made you apply to HBO Access? Were you just entering everything? Because I was entering everything. That's how I ended up in Nickelodeon. But like, how did you end up getting into HBO Access? And where did you start finding all these contests and shit anyway?
There was a time where I also was entering everything. It's kind of dumb looking back at it, right? But I mean, after that, I think I did my research and what the actual competitions that I would see writers that won getting traction or getting careers. I actually could not apply to fellowships before having my visa, because I'm an immigrant, I'm from Mexico. So I think as soon as I got my visa, I'm like, I'm finally applying for this, because the reason why you can do that is because some of the fellowships give you a little bit of money, so you need a social security, which you don't have if you're not allowed to work here. So once I got that, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna do this, and I chose only two fellowships, and I got both. It was HBO and ScreenCraft.
Wow!
Unheard of.
Yeah.
Two out of two.
Yeah.
No pressure.
No pressure. Well, I mean, I think I would have applied to others if those didn't work out. But it was also the timing of the deadlines,
mm-hmm.
that those were the earliest. So that's how I chose them.
Mm. And shout out to homie Darnell Brown, who's also in the program with you. That's my homie. He worked on like Mike Tyson and something else. Like I was super happy for him.
He's wonderful. We still have an HBO fellowship text chain, and Darnell he's not gonna hate me for saying this, but he owns it. He sends the longest messages.
Sound like me. That's probably like our podcast thing.
And we love it. We always love reading Darnell's Bibles.
Wow.
Bibles.
So Lucy, you've won like a lot of screenwriting contests. What were you able to get from winning those? Like, did that open any doors for you?
Yes. So I initially, Well, the Screencraft Fellowship got me my reps.
Nice.
And the HBO Fellowship, they could have also done that. They did that for many other writers, but I feel like it was a perfect combination because that one helped me develop a pilot that, again, still goes out and gets me jobs. Mm-hmm. So it definitely jump-started like my career. It got me, I think the HBO Fellowship as well got me my first staffing job, if I remember correctly. If not, my manager will be like, no, it was me. But maybe both, but definitely, it definitely puts all the spotlight on you. I think we were all getting jobs. And it was actually the only generation that... I think none of us finished the fellowship because we were getting staffed.
And then being pulled out, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That happened in Nickelodeon. It was like, I was last, though.
Oh.
Like it was like, all right, now, God damn it. One of y'all got to fly off the porch. But we finally ended up getting staffed at the bottom. What did you learn from the HBO fellowship? Because I do believe that, like, the fastest way to get staffed for a new writer is through a fellowship. So you're also an example mm-hmm. of that. But, like... How was the process and what did you learn from the HBO fellowship?
I learned to pitch myself as a writer, which I think is very, very important. I learned to interview for jobs. Mm-hmm. And I learned to find my, I want to say voice, but honestly, I don't even know what voice is anymore. Yeah, like, I guess being more in touch with my sensibilities. We had a great director of the program, Kelly Edwards, and she really pushed us to go deeper. It's like, okay, why do you want to write that? Don't love that reason. Can you go deeper? Can you go deeper? Can you go deeper? Yeah. So
that's what she said.
Yeah. So it was pretty fulfilling as a writer to be like, wow, I didn't know I could go deeper, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. find just new shades of your own writing that you didn't know you had. But definitely business wise, I think pitching myself and learning to interview pretty much.
And how do you pitch yourself?
So I talk about how I grew up. I mean, I talk about my mom, first mm-hmm. of all, that she was a medical examiner and how that traumatized me. It did not. It really did not. But then, you know, I also talk about growing up in Mexico when the cartel was on the rise and just going to bed, hearing gunshots like three blocks away and that being normal, you know, my brother just being like, oh, stay away from the window.
It's fucked.
It's just, exactly, it's fucked up. So I realized that I lived within fear. Mm-hmm. It was until I was here walking in Burbank at 10 p.m. I was like, wow. I feel safe.
compared to there, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And so I was living within fear, and I realized that I love exploring fear, and I love exploring what fear does to people. Mm-hmm. Whether it is going through fear to find love, to find bravery, to find other parts of yourself. And I think that is why I lean so much to horror. It's, of course, an on-the-nose type of genre that you could do, or thrillers. But I also apply it on the dramas that I write. I absolutely love exploring fear in all its shapes and forms. And that is the pitch. I wouldn't be able to do that because I actually was like, I don't know how to connect fear to this drama that I have. And it was Kelly, pretty much. I was like, well, I think that's what you're doing. And now I just said it.
Mm. I actually think it's smart. And I also learned that through my fellowship, because I do feel like as writers, it's hard to talk about yourself and your writing,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying? Like, I think, and also figuring out how to pitch yourself, because mm-hmm. like, shit, we're used to being in final draft and like writing. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm not really thinking about what the fuck my voice is or what I write. And I think in the program, they do kind of teach you to like, okay, one thing I noticed for myself is like, these are the pieces of writing I've had. What are the connecting themes mm-hmm. and shit inside here? And it does help you when you like show up and you're like, this is what I write. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? These are the topics I'm interested in, because it helps the executive or the showrunner or whatever just be like, oh, I could get Lucy to do this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so, yeah. It, I think it's more about telling, kind of connecting your experience to your voice and your passions. And it sounds very simple, but it's actually kind of
hard
to get there. Yeah.
But this is a great exercise for any writer to do, and you can do it on your own. And like, you can also like, you know, try out your personal logline, like on your friends, you know, like have them like give you feedback. You also said that the fellowship taught you how to interview. So what tips can you give our listeners?
Well, I think what I learned the most was sort of finding your own experiences that match the show. So of course I told the story of the medical examiner when I interviewed for my first show. That was a horror. Immediately it's like, well, I actually kind of exaggerated a little bit. I was like, well, I grew up in a morgue. And it was like, what?
Hey, listen, do that shit, sell that shit.
You just, you do what you gotta do.
So, I of course didn't grow up, you know, there, but I was around there. So I at least make people laugh, but it also intrigues them. And it's like, okay, hang on, did you actually, you know? So that of course got me that job. And then when I interviewed for All Rise, that is more,
court
drama, I started talking about my immigration experience and how, nice. You know, the legalities, and so, sort of like how that world also kind of like it's four walls and you kind of try to navigate, through it. So yeah, it's sort of like, of course you're not going to have every experience in the world, but I think we all have gone through breakups, you know, I don't know, someone has died, we aspire to be something, we probably didn't grow up with a dad or parents got divorced. So like just finding that specific story, of course I'm saying in a very vague way, but if there's something specific about that breakup or about that divorce, I think you study the show that you're going to interview for and you kind of like link it, find out a way to link it.
Also, in your, correct me if I'm wrong, but you had a manager, then you got rid of a manager, then you got another manager, right?
Yes.
Okay, so the only reason why I'm bringing this up is because I do, you know, we, listen, a writer friend of mine texted me 2 days ago, he fired his rep, you know what I'm saying? Another one, I had to talk out of firing their rep just because, but for the listeners out there, you made that change. What advice do you have for somebody out there who has a rep, but they are thinking about leaving their rep and they're scared because they feel like they'll never be repped again? Like even Sean, who was on our podcast, I remember I had to tell him, I was like, bro, you're going to get another rep. Like he was placing in contests. Like it's this fear though, that we fight so hard for this rep. Mel had changed the manager before. So can you just tell us about your experience without, you know, we don't have to throw nobody under the bus or under the morgue. But
sending it to the morgue. Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, yeah, getting rid sounds harsh. I think it's like every relationship. Some relationships just need to end, or they're just not meant to be, and that is not anyone's fault. Sometimes it is, but usually, you know, it's just not connecting or clicking. I believe to trust in your instinct. If you're just not feeling it, then you're probably right. Every time I've talked to a writer that are thinking about switching reps and they tell me their concerns, I'm like, that's not you just thinking about it. It's actually very legit and you should change reps. I think the way to do it, well, the way I did it was trying to provide feedback. This is what I... what isn't working for me, and then you see how they respond, and their response I think is what will make you decide whether to keep them or not.
Facts.
Because I've heard of a couple of reps that actually take the note. It's like, oh, I just didn't know that's what you needed, and that is actually a lesson for us to actually speak up and share like in any relationship, what our needs are. But then there's some times that they just don't adjust, or it's just not a good fit, or whatever the case may be, and then you just let them go. It's like, okay, well, let's part ways. Nothing personal. It's just I need something different.
Yeah. Did you do it through an email or over the phone?
I did it in person.
Oh, shit. Okay. Classy.
Wow. Classy. Class act.
Yeah.
Lucy Luna. No, I mean, there is so much correlation between your relationship with your reps and, like, your personal relationship, like, dating. And it's, like, mm-hmm. I think it's a really good way to look at it, right? Because it's, like, sometimes you do get afraid to leave a relationship because you're, like, no one else is going to want me.
Yeah.
And also, I think it's a little bit unrealistic to think, oh, okay, the first rep I have, I'm going to have this rep for the entirety of my career, right? Like, some people do. It's the same way some people, like, marry their high school sweetheart and, like, they stay married and, like, they're really happy. But it's, like, that just doesn't happen for everyone.
I agree. I think for me, I definitely had that instinct of, like, oh, this is not working for me. But I didn't know if I was, like, maybe I'm being a diva, maybe I'm asking too much. Mm-hmm. And then when I realized, it was when I actually was in the HBO fellowship that I saw everybody else and I got feedback and was like, no, actually, you should probably leave. Then I was like, well, but I don't have momentum. Nobody's going to want me. She was the only one that really wanted me. So those thoughts are, of course, in our minds. And I think there's also a lot of writers that say yes because of that reason. Mm-hmm. Like, well, nobody else wants me. I guess I'll say yes and see how that goes. And I don't think that ends very well in most cases.
I agree. And that brings us to Haley.
Yes!
Who has been on the podcast. Amazing episode. So how did you meet? How did y'all meet?
I have the best reps in the world, and I hope they're listening.
Go ahead, shout
them
out.
I am very, very honest about it, and I know that a lot of writers are like, "Well, I don't know how I feel about them." I am like, y'all, I have the best reps. So ScreenCraft introduced me to Kaylee Marsh. She's my manager. Mm-hmm. And they asked me if I had a list of potential reps or companies, and I was like, well, I can put that together, but I think I want Kaylee Marsh. I did my research, and I'm like, wow, she's badass. So,
does she have a list?
Yeah, she created the blood list.
Yeah, the blood list. Shout out to her.
Like, yeah.
If I wrote horror, I would have been trying to get on that goddamn list.
Yeah, she's so badass. She's very assertive. She's a hustler, at least back then, I was very shy, very not assertive. And I'm like, I need someone that is. So,
that's smart, though.
She, thankfully, she liked me. And so she signed me right away. Actually, she put me in touch with Haley and Nathan. Nathan Deremmer. He is my agent for TV, and Haley is my agent for features.
Nice.
She actually came to the meeting, which I didn't know that was something that managers do. But she was just so invested. She came to the meeting, and I just saw them interact, and I was like, wow, they get along. I think I won that. Mm-hmm. I really liked Haley and Nathan, but I also liked how my manager interacted with them. Mm-hmm. I think
synergy.
They shared a couple of clients already, and I'm like, I want them. If they're not talking to me all the time, I know that they're going to be getting along and talking to each other. So that's kind of how we went with them. And they're all great.
That's dope. Do you have any advice as far as, like, what are maybe like three or four things or questions writers should ask if they're having a meeting with a manager for the first time?
That is a good question. I don't even remember what I asked them. I was very nervous.
Well, number one, it's okay to be nervous.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's totally okay to be nervous. I also didn't know what to expect, and mm-hmm. they had like such different personalities, and it was like me reading the room and observing a lot. But I think if it was today, I would ask them what they're looking for in a client, mm-hmm. How much are they expecting me to be writing Because honestly, everyone has different answers. Some are like, I want you to be writing all the time. And then I have heard of other stories that are like, no, actually, I have enough, you know, because it depends on quality as well. I would ask them, and I think I did ask them about their communication style, because that would drive me nuts initially. Mm-hmm. Like, am I emailing too much? Can I call? Like, I think even recently my agent was like, Lucy, you can call me. Because I was like, hey, can we hop on a call to discuss this? And he's like, you can just call me. I am too much. But yeah, I think communication style. I also ask them how many clients they have, I think, because I'm just curious about the bandwidth. I think agents have way more clients than managers do. And yeah, I think that's pretty much.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. I don't know if that was four, but.
Lucy, you're really beautiful. We love beautiful people here at Two Writers Talking Shit. Have you done things in front of the camera?
No.
Oh.
I mean, I've had headshots for. For writing. I don't think I have, and I think I would go crazy if I love being behind the camera. Mm. Pictures I may enjoy, but even that, you know, when someone is taking a picture, I'm like.
Yeah, no.
She's doing a cute little pose for our listeners who can't see. We'll get a picture of that for sure. Now, you worked on Two Sentence Horror Stories. Mm-hmm. I'm rubbing my thigh right now. I don't know why. Sayed and I have to share a microphone right now, and so the configuration's just off. And I just found myself touching my own thigh. Okay.
You go, girl.
Okay, you worked on Two Sentence Horror Stories. Now, I developed a TV show with a production company who made that show. And so that was kind of like one of the shows that they were like, look, we're doing something. Mm-hmm. So what was your experience like working on that?
It was my first room, so I didn't know what to expect. And for me, it was lovely. It was a little bit... messy in the sense that the showrunner had to leave in the middle, and then another one had to replace him, and then
oh my god, you know what's crazy? This just came to me. This is a little bit okay. A friend of mine, I won't name, interviewed to be a showrunner on Two Sentence Horror Stories, and had never been in a writing room before.
Oh,
my friend did not get the job. Anyways, please.
That is interesting. Maybe that is why. but honestly, it was a very intimate group, very small, and I'm still friends with all of them. So I think it was, for a first experience, it was the best that it could be. Also, I got staffed alongside Melody Cooper, who is one of my dearest friends. She is also part of the HBO fellowship of that generation. And we were walking out of Warner Brothers one day doing fellowship things. And we were like, imagine if we could, you know, get our first job together. And we did. Fire. So it was great because we could talk to each other. Am I talking too much? Am I talking too little? What can I do better? So it was wonderful. Probably it wasn't, but I remember it being really, really beautiful.
How was the interview process? So like, did you get this through the fellowship?
No.
Okay. So you got this outside of the fellowship. Did you have to meet the showrunner?
Yes.
Okay. Could you let me know, let the audience know about what that was like? I mean, obviously you were nervous.
Yeah. I don't think I was that nervous.
Okay.
For that one.
Oh, shit.
I was very nervous for my reps.
Well, shit, I was nervous.
I don't know. I mean, I was just like too excited.
Okay.
And also, again, HBO does really heavy work. Mm-hmm. We all cry during our first week. That's how intense the emotional work was. It was huge because I was, before the pandemic.
Mm.
So it was in person.
Holy shit.
So I had to go to an office And it was like a meeting room. And it was like all a bunch of producers and the showrunner. It was not just the showrunner. So it was like five people or
really?
So. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Wow. Yeah. And I mean, back then, TV was moving crazy. Mm-hmm. Now it doesn't anymore.
Yeah, we'll but, talk about that.
But yeah, it was like, okay, you have a meeting tomorrow. And then...
Oh, shit, yeah. You got one day notice?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You have, like, the that's interview tomorrow. How it goes, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of how it was for me, too, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, damn.
And then after the interview, I think it was the next day or 2 days later, it was like, okay, you got an offer. And, oh, by the way, you start next week. It was...
That's how that shit goes.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a day job back then, so it was very stressful to be like, oh, I'm leaving, guys.
Well, how was that? Because I want to talk about this, too, because, like, I had quit. So it was during COVID, and so I took a job online, very nice job, working for a company where I would search out Black-owned record stores around the nation. Unfortunately, there was only, like, six, so it wasn't a lot of work. But what I'm saying is that, like, I remember they had no idea I fucking wrote television. Like, I mean, when I say none, it would be like you telling me you're an astronaut. Like, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? On the low. But I remember...
Or the high.
Mel. We love Mel. But I remember that I was like, how the fuck do I explain to them that, like, I'm about to quit because I'm in a writing Nickelodeon fellowship? Like, they're going to think I'm fucking insane. But so I just want to know, what was your process like? Did you just say, I'm out, y'all, peace? Or that what you do?
Well, I was working for a remote company, and honestly, I was very, very lucky because it was a startup. So at the time it was like 30 people, and we all knew each other, so everybody knew that I wanted to write.
Okay.
And when I got the job, they were able to give me a leave of absence. Mm. So the first couple weeks, I was allowed to do that day job, like at night after the room, and then I just left. And then when I came back, it was the pandemic had started, and then I got my second room like within a couple months or so.
Oh,
and at that time I was like, yeah, I think I have to leave. I can't keep doing this to you guys.
Oh,
and
so they were like, yeah. So you actually took time off from
that? Yeah, it was just a leave of absence for my first room was just like 3 months or so. So they were like, yeah, we'll give you 3 months and then you come back and you'll be back. So when I came back, I got another job again, so I was like, okay, I can't ask for that again. I'm just gonna leave. Yeah.
I've never heard a story like that ever in life. I think most writers would have been like, I'm out. Like, you know what I'm saying? I ain't coming back. I'm in my first room.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just didn't think I would get another job right
that's
away.
Real. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, well, that's like being rational. Everyone else would be like, eat my dust, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like, Saeed, how did you quit your online demanding Black record store
search? Like, I was the Sherlock Holmes of Black record-owned record stores.
Google.
That's what all I did all day. But I had to call them and talk to them, though, still. But, I was just like, I know this is going to sound weird, but because it was around the time where they were going to re-me up too for the job. And I was just like, look, I know this is going to sound weird. I know it's going to sound out of nowhere, but I got into Nickelodeon TV writing fellowship. And then I was like, and I can't come back. I'm sorry. I'm going to go for my dreams. Thank you for allowing me to have a job and get off unemployment. But I was just like, I got to go for my dream. And he was just like, damn, I didn't even know you wanted to write. But okay. Mm.
Yeah.
Mic drop from somebody.
So that's the other way you could quit. Like, you know what I'm saying? But I feel, you know, look, it's hard. And I think what Mel is attesting to is, like, I hear, like, it's hard to get your first job. It's even harder to get the second job.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that you went from, like, one room. So I could understand your hesitation to quit the job. But then you went right to another room, which is rare. So I get it.
Yeah. It was shocking because it was also a pandemic. So it was like a 3-month gap where nothing was happening and everybody was figuring things out. But I was also very surprised because I was like, I don't think I'm gonna get another job that quickly. Everybody just keeps saying how hard it is. And I think it's until now that we are finding out how hard it is.
Yeah, speaking of that, how did you survive the strike? And what do you think is different now in the TV space? How do you see it this year? How are you approaching it this year?
Everything is very slow right now. I keep hearing that there's no jobs and everybody needs jobs. So the demand is crazy. And I was able to survive the strike because I was very lucky. I had two seasons, well, actually three jobs back to back. So I was able to save money. I'm very, very fortunate because I'm still able to survive because of that. So yeah, it's good to be employed. but now, I mean, I've been hearing of many writers that are interviewing for jobs that are like, oh yeah, well, this show is going to start in the fall. It's like, what? When back then, you know, it was hearing about the job, interview next day, you start in a couple more days, and now everybody is just taking it very carefully, I guess. I cannot even start to imagine what's going on behind the scenes, but it is very, very slow. But I also think it may be a good time for features. So that is also what I'm hopeful for, but I don't know. We'll see, I guess.
What tips do you have for saving money? Because
another male personal, you know. We gotta have like a drop for the male yeah. personal question.
The people want to know, Saeed. The people is me, because I'm amazing at spending money. Like nobody's better. But saving, give us your tips.
Maybe not having it for many years. To the point that that you're so scared you're gonna not have it again. So that actually made me very, very conservative with my spending. And it was actually my manager, again, Kaylee Marsh, who was like, girl, you gotta start enjoying your money as well. Get yourself the car of your dreams. Get yourself a massage. You know, as long as you're saving, I think you deserve to spend that money. So the smart thing that I did, though, was to not invest. Everybody was telling me to invest.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, there's a strike coming. Let me see how that goes. I may need this money. So let me see how that goes. And then if it ends on time or whatever, I'll put all of it on my, I don't know, investments. But I didn't. And I'm grateful because otherwise I would be absolutely dead right now.
Listen, I was going to buy a Tesla Mel gnome. Like, I was going to go to the lot. And then I knew that strike was coming. I made the wise choice. Man, just hop in that Uber a little bit longer.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And then, you know, I'll get the Tesla after this dust settles.
Yeah, you will. You will. Yeah, we'll go on drives.
Yeah, we'll go on Tesla drives. Automated. I won't drive. It'll be a pilot. It'll be automated pilot. I don't ever want to drive again.
But, I'm so scared of that.
No. All right. So I noticed also, speaking of features, on your IMDb, you've written a number of shorts, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So what did you learn from that process? Because we've had other... We had Sardé on here. We have other people who've done shorts. I actually think shorts are going to be coming back and more important because of the shrinkage that's going to happen in television. I think they're going to stop doing niche shows like Atlanta, Rami, Reservation Dogs, which is going to open up the opportunity for independent creators to work inside and outside the system. And outside the system, we can make those niche stories. So what did you learn from doing shorts and how has it helped you?
Well, disclaimer, I only consider one of those shorts to be a real short because That's a short film that I decided to write and direct because I wanted to see if I could do horror or if I would cringe when I would watch it. Because horror is hard. So I was very, very... I learned to be economic in everything. Production, cast, everything. So that was... good. It's almost learning to edit as well, right? Like less is more. Mm-hmm. So that was a good experience. I don't consider myself a director yet. One day I would love to do it, but it was mostly like just an experiment for myself. And the other shorts were all in Mexico.
Okay.
So those were before I actually studied anything.
Okay.
So it was just me shooting the shit. You know, but I learned leadership skills. I did learn that I could rally people and just get people excited. So that is all I took from that. The reason why they're on IMDb is because immigration asked me to. So otherwise, I don't think they would be there.
Yeah. Spoken like a true director as far as organizing people and stuff like that. So that is dope. Do you have any advice? Like if you can give us five things that a writer, if a writer's about to get staffed soon, do you have like five things that you can tell us that would be helpful for that first day or first week in the room?
Okay. So... don't be afraid to ask your showrunner how they work.
Nice.
A lot of writers, including myself, I was just trying to figure out the room before it actually occurred to me that I was like, hey, how do you run the room? Mm-hmm. You know, like, can I have a meeting with you? I just want to know how you work. Mm-hmm. That would have caught a lot of my anxiety of the first 2 weeks. Second, it's okay to just listen. I don't think anybody expects, especially a staff writer, to be doing too much on the first couple weeks, even the first, couple weeks to a month. Everybody is aware that you don't know anything yet. Third, you probably are not just a staff writer. And I say this because it could be wrong for many other showrunners, but in all the shows that I've been on, they expect me to contribute the same as any other writer. Doesn't matter, regardless of title. So if you have a good idea, definitely don't be like, oh, but I already spoke this morning, because there's this thing that people say, like, speak one time before lunch and one after, and that's it. No. But that brings me to the fourth that I think is listen. Listen, a lot of us are so excited to also show off a little bit. You know, it's like, yeah, this is the reason why you hired me. I have great ideas. But sometimes we tend to interrupt or tend to cut people off because we're just excited to, you know, share our ideas. And honestly, when it starts going around the room, maybe by that time, your idea just doesn't fit anymore. So just listening, I think it's important. And then the fifth, I would say take care of yourself. I think it's really important to decompress. I know there's a lot of work that goes outside of the room, research, reading, but if you can actually just not work, do it. I think it's very important.
Facts. Mm. All right, so we usually close out with this question.
I want to ask the closer.
Oh, you want to ask it?
I'm going to ask the closer.
Oh, I love it.
I'm going to ask the closer.
Hold on. We are going to pivot. Let me move out the way of the mic. Here we go.
Lucy, in closing.
Melanie.
Yes. Tell us three things you're watching, reading, or listening to that you absolutely love. Just one of each category.
Ooh, I am watching Griselda.
I'm on that next week. No, I'm about to watch that. No, I haven't seen it yet.
Guest star.
No, okay.
Yeah. It's me and Sofia Vergara. next week I'm going to start on that. But go ahead, please.
Amazing. Yeah. I'm gonna ask who that is once we are done with this. Yeah, so a friend of mine is actually plays Dixon.
Oh, shit.
So I'm like, yeah, I'm absolutely going to watch you. And I am enjoying it. Halfway through it. So it's really nice to see Sophia do something different. I'm very, very proud of her. Mm-hmm. Listening, your podcast?
Yeah. You okay? Yeah. We okay? Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
I actually, yeah, I'm a fan. I do listen. You know, I drive my drives. I live in Playa Vista now, so all my drives are kind of long. So you guys give me company.
Appreciate that.
And reading, I am actually reading right now. Well, I tend to read multiple things at once, but according to what mood I'm having. Fleischman is in trouble.
I love that show though, side note.
I love the show.
How is the book?
And it's pretty close to the show. I was like, I actually want to, because it's very poetic. That show was, I don't know, it was so refreshing.
Shit was crazy.
So good. So simple at the same time, right? I'm not going to spoil it, but people should watch it. It's just about relationships and aging, and everything is so relatable, but it's very poetic. So I really wanted to see how that was playing out on the page, and I'm loving it too. Really good.
I might take that up.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Lucia.
Thank you, guys.
Two Writers Talking Shit. How can people find you? Are you on Twitter?
I don't.
Or
I mean,
is it called X? It's called X now. Do I have to call it X?
I mean, I have everything, but I don't use anything except for Instagram. Is Lucy.Luna.
Okay.
And I use Threads, which is the same. If you message me on Twitter, I may get back to you next year. I just don't open the app anymore. But
so go ahead and slide right on into those DMs.
You'll be there forever. All right, well, look, appreciate you coming by. Mel, where can they, you know, write a comment or...
Listeners, you need to get into these comments. You need to be rating us 5 stars. You need to be leaving us an incredible review. It's so easy to do. You can do it on your Spotify. You can do it on your Apple Podcast. You could even do it on YouTube. However, we prefer Spotify or Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, and look, I love the DMs, but please, you can DM me, but then write that same wonderful DM in the comments, you know?
Don't be shy.
And who knows? I might even, like, next episode, we'll shout out your comments and shout you out.
We're going to read the best ones out.
Yes. So please comment. Two Writers Talking Shit. Another amazing episode.
See you next time.
Peace. Two Writers Talking Shit is an original podcast created by Melanie Mars and Saeed Crumpler. Our producer is Kayla Guest. Our audio engineer is T. Kelly.
Listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you damn well please. All we ask is that you subscribe, rate us 5 stars, and give us a glowing review.
If you're not going to give us 5 stars or any glowing reviews, then why even log on? Save your rants for an open mic.
If you have any questions for us, and I do mean any, you can email us at twowriterstalkingshit@gmail.com. That's the number 2, and then writerstalkingshit@gmail.com.
See you next episode.
Bye.